Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
How do you respond to people that say now is not your time to run for president?
Well, I'm not running to prep for president to be somebody. I'm running to do something. I think 2024 is a hinge point in American history. I think I'm the only candidate running who can win the primary, defeat Joe Biden, and then deliver on all of these things that we know that needs to be done. So I feel a calling to offer myself to service. You know, people say, oh, if you wait here, look, that's not how I think. I don't care about what happens, you know, in the future, holding office, all that stuff. You know, I have the ability to go get the job done for the country now. I don't think we have 4 years to be able to wait. And I think it could end up getting a lot worse if we don't do something now. It's also, this is a republic. This isn't a monarchy. There's not bloodlines. Nobody's chosen for their term. You got to go and you got to earn it.
I like that answer. I think that's a good answer. That's Governor Ron DeSantis, who was, where, I'm so besieged by the primary. Where was this one at? Is this?
That's a good question. I don't know.
And he was answering a question about, oh, it's the primary. Oh, it was New, that's right, New Hampshire. Is this, do you have the, basically asking him, you know, why you're running, et cetera, et cetera. You know, why don't you just step, I hate when people ask anybody to step aside in a primary. But that was a good answer. Welcome to the show. It's Monday. Now, it's, well, your lovable curmudgeon Dana Lash here with you. It's Monday and it's like a weird Monday. We were talking about this absence of drama. For the most part, I just felt like I just screwed us over, right?
Jinxed us.
Mm-hmm. Because the House is out, like Congress is out for 6 weeks. So, I mean, I'm actually not against them being out. I like them not being there because it means they can't be stupid and do dumb things. And they can't pass horrible bits of legislation. So I'm kind of torn about it. Like the broadcaster part of me wants them to be there so that there's drama. And because, you know, drama's, you know, it's fun to talk about. It's fun to make fun of these people. They give their goofy floor speeches, etc. But the citizen in me is very glad that they're not there. So welcome to the show. Monday, we're going to get you set up, get you topped off. Not really a lot happened over the weekend. You know, no matter where you're listening, it was kind of a quiet weekend. So almost like a calm before the storm. You can listen to Coast to Coast. You can also watch the simulcast of the radio show on YouTube, Facebook, and Channel 347 DirecTV. Biden came back from being on vacation, briefly stopped at the White House. Did he go back to Delaware? I don't know where the hell he's at.
He didn't answer questions.
He didn't answer any questions because he was shouted some questions. Is this, you know, as close as people can get to him? By when was the last time that he had a press conference where he came out and there was a podium and he was taking questions from the press specifically? Like an actual press conference where he can, you know, he's taking questions from the press and it's designed for that purpose.
Was it this year?
I don't think so. I was actually thinking about this. I'm like, when was he last actually answering stuff? Well, nobody knows. Anyway, so he's back, well, kind of, on vacation. Nobody knows. And meanwhile, Congress is out. So it's they're going to be back in their home districts. They're going to be giving speeches and shaking babies and pressing or kissing hands or wait, kissing babies, shaking hands, doing all that stuff. So, yeah, he's held the fewest news conferences since Reagan, and he's been on vacation longer than any other president. We've talked about this, but I just thought it was weird that he's there, like very briefly he was there at the White House, and he didn't answer a single, not a single one. He's so even when he's at the White House, he's still kind of on vacation. Yeah. He's like not answering anything. All right, so the other thing too, because you know, it is the candidates on break. They're going back to their districts. They're talking to their constituents. One of the things that you're seeing, and I just want to put this in proper context, you're seeing all of this stuff about Mitch McConnell getting booed in Kentucky. I remember first hearing about it's the Fancy Farm Picnic. That's where he was. That's where Mitch McConnell was. Because if you look at all of these, oh my gosh, I mean, it's just Mitch McConnell is just booed. And oh, look, listen to all the boos. And I've just noticed like all of these pieces that have been written about this. But I don't think that people understand what the Fancy Farm Picnic is, because that's kind of what they do. It's sort of like, isn't it kind of like a roast? It's a barbecue that they have. And it's their big political event. And they have politicians that show up, elected officials that show up. And they have Democrats and Republicans. And the sides are divided between Republicans and Democrats. So you have both, everybody from every political stripe is there. And the whole purpose of it is to be rowdy. Like they're rowdy. It kind of reminds me sort of the Brits with Parliament, you know, how they sort of, they shout each other down and they roast each other, etc. So for these people who are writing these stories, and I saw several of them, and I saw some of them, you know, shared on Facebook, Twitter, etc. I kind of have to wonder, how in the hell are you writing about politics in the United States and you're unaware of what this event is? Because it's so unique. Right? It's a very unique event. And I see all these people writing this stuff for the purpose of this very, I guess this narrative, they're trying to act like, oh, Republicans are in trouble, even in Kentucky. That's kind of how it's been. Oh, they're in trouble, even in Kentucky. Look at his Mitch McConnell talking to his constituents, and they're booing him. Except it's like Republicans and Democrats, and it's a rowdy kind of picnic, and that's sort of the purpose. They trade barbs. It's kind of what it is. I just don't know. Like NBC was like, oh, McConnell's been heckled with calls to retire. Like his own constituents were heckling him, and everybody gets booed at this damn thing. Like that. But what? That's. I mean, sometimes people can't even hardly hear the speeches for the barbs and the booing, and that's the event. It's the thing. Good grief. I just think it's so goofy, the fact that, you know, here you have, and granted, he may not be popular elsewhere in the country, but he's popular in his district. I mean, those are constituents. But I just think it's weird to misrepresent this. It's just kind of, it's just odd to me. But it's you know, you have these people that get involved in writing about media and politics. And I just think that you should maybe perhaps do a little bit of legwork and learn what you're writing about before firing off some politically charged missive. Honestly, we have such anemic political writing in this country, and a lot of these people that are coming out of these brainwashed entities that we used to call universities, they make it even worse, because half of them cannot be prevailed upon to do the bare minimum, to do some of the research into this. I mean, the fact that somebody at NBC wrote about this and is like, oh my gosh, he's booed by his own constituents, without noting the history of the event, you're a moron. You should be embarrassed. If I was your editor, I'd fire your ass just for being that stupid. I mean, there's no, it's not about giving someone a second chance. It's you should have been good enough to at least know the bare minimum, know the history of an event. Good heavens. I mean, if you're going to attack somebody, I'm all for going at people. But what I hate is when people go at other individuals over something so dumb, especially when there's other, like, better fruit to pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, why? Why would you do that? So 2024, I don't want to hyper focus on any of the really, I mean, everybody's in New Hampshire. They're meeting with voters, meeting with constituents in New Hampshire. Everybody's trying to get ahead of the game for early primaries and caucuses. We'll talk more about this here coming up. But in the meantime, over the weekend also, I felt like this was a little bit of schadenfreude. I'd ask you if you guys knew what happened, but you guys don't watch women's soccer. Do you? Megan Rapinoe, she missed a penalty kick. And it was pretty dramatic. It was essentially her last play of the season. Or, well, her career, right? So... it was described as they crashed out of the World Cup after this epic penalty shootout against Sweden. And this is after she really made herself this very polarizing figure in women's soccer. So they were eliminated from FIFA, the World Cup. And it was a shootout. It was 5-4 for Sweden over the U.S. And she was the one she lost it. She was the one who missed this penalty shot, this penalty kick. And the final moment of her professional career was that. And it was weird because after she missed the shot, when she saw that she missed, she had this weird grin on her face. Now, I'll give her that she was probably thinking, oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. And it was sort of like a sick to your stomach kind of grin. But the reason that I think a lot of people, sadly, even, you know, people who would normally be rooting for the U.S. team, feel like it was deserved is because she decided to make that sport so damn toxic. Let me just put it in perspective of this. We came off of, as a country, this, everybody was fighting over NFL period, right? Like, sports used to be the last place where you could tune in and tune out politics. And now everybody's a political activist. And a lot of people were really excited about the prospect of soccer expanding here in the United States because it has been. You know, then you have Inter Miami, and then you have Lionel Messi, who, by the way, was in Dallas over the weekend. He didn't miss his penalty kicks. Just want to say, Messi didn't miss his. He didn't miss his. You know, that might be the difference between, like, the pro and the wannabe. I don't know. But they were in Dallas. Did you guys see some of the crowd? I saw tons of pictures. I saw a lot of the local news. They had a lot of coverage of, because they had Beckham, team's owner, because they were in versus Dallas. And there were just tons of people out in the street. Juan and I were talking about ticket prices last week. I think just like, a couple tickets were like $2,300, something crazy like that. Super popular. So it's expanding, and they don't get political with it. I mean, the worst thing you could say is, I don't know if I like that shade of pink on the jersey, but you know what? That's like the word that it's that people are not getting political with it. And it's expanding a sport after everything else has been so hyper politicized. Here's another vein, another, you know, area that people can come together and we can tune out politics and we can just, you know, enjoy sports, enjoy the game, enjoy the matches, enjoy the sportsmanship, the athleticism. So thankfully, Messi's star power is way greater than hers, but she has been such a divisive politicized figure. Can you imagine what the reception to women's soccer would have been like had she not poisoned the well? That's what really gets me. She didn't have to do that. You know, there are ways to advocate for your position without poisoning the well. And she didn't do that. She made it to where everyone had to bear the yoke of her activism. We got more on the culture of this coming up. We're also, just to give you a rundown, we've got the latest with, did you guys, over the weekend, Jack Smith decided he needed a protective order because of Trump's tweet. He needed a protective order, Kane. So we're going to get into all of that. We got a whole bunch of stuff. Stephen Yates is going to be joining us as well.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com Bomb.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the Berry Mocha, Vanilla Bomb, or Espresso Salted Caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit BlackRifleCoffee.com/Dana. That's BlackRifleCoffee.com/Dana.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first up, this so X, as you know, Twitter, and I noticed now it's reposts and posts. It's not called retweets and tweets anymore. I just literally saw that yesterday. They finally changed that. So X, formerly Twitter, is commandeering different handles from people. Like they took the @music handle from a longtime user, a software developer, and that account was created in 2007. They built a big community. And now that new handle assigned to him by the company is @musicfan. So they said that they have the right to take back a username. And that's going to, you know, that's true. But at the same time, if they're wanting to foster relationships with creators or users, I hate the term creator. You're not creating nothing. Users of the account, of their services and growing, you know, these huge accounts. I think they need to be a little bit better at it than that. You can't just, you know, you can, but that's bad business to do that. So I don't know. I don't know who's making those decisions, but you know, we'll see. Also, Wells Fargo customers were scrambling after deposits were disappearing from their bank accounts. This is according to NBC. They said for the second time this year, Wells Fargo didn't. Don't they debank people? Yeah, okay. They've acknowledged that direct deposits were not showing up in their customers' accounts, and some of them were in Dallas, Texas. That's kind of crazy. They were the representative they with Wells Fargo. They acknowledged that deposits were not showing up on customers' accounts. They emailed a statement out just Friday morning saying that the issue was affecting only a limited number of customers. And the vast majority of instances had been resolved, but the other would be resolved soon. But when this is like the second time this has happened, and then when phony bank accounts were resurfacing there just like a little bit ago, you know, I think maybe they got a bigger problem. Maybe focus less on debanking people and more on actually, you know, making sure that you're banking well yourself. This is weird. A city mistakenly tore down this guy's house, and now they're suing him for $68,000 in demolition costs. Yeah, it's in Atlanta, Georgia. An Atlanta man said the paper had the wrong address on it, the paperwork, and it did. And they have their local news investigating. And so now the city, after the demolition, and they demolished the wrong house. Now they're trying to get $68,000 with interest in demolition costs from the guy. So clearly they're going to court. Stick with us. We got a lot more, including AI and Zoom. Stop using Zoom. It's trash. You've heard me rave about the Kel-Tec KSG shotgun for a long time. And the fact is, I cannot say enough good things about it. I mean, the KSG is the one that started it all, made ordinary shotguns obsolete, and still reigns supreme. But the big reason I keep raving about it is I'm also the proud owner of one, at least. And trust me, I really put the KSG to the test before adding it to my collection. It's perfect for home defense or tactical situations. And this 12 gauge is a reliable go-to that's easy to handle for everyone. The KSG shotgun is the first 12 gauge pump action shotgun chambered for 3-inch shells and with dual tube magazines, offers a capacity of 12+1. Its downward shell ejection makes the KSG truly ambidextrous and ejects shells away from your face. It's compact, lightweight, and easy to maneuver and control. Learn more about the KSG shotgun at KeltecWeapons.com and follow Kel-Tec on social media. Visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's KELTEC Weapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
We've had two challenges. We had the American Revolution that started the country. We had the Civil War. Both times they tried to deal with going throwing away the principles of one man, one vote, the principles of a democracy. What side are you on? Are you on the side of America and what it conceptually stands for, or are you on the side of King George or the Confederates? That's where I would cast Donald Trump.
Did we accidentally like get drunk without actually having consumed alcohol? Did we fall into some fairy dust that Hunter left behind somewhere? Because I'm trying to figure out what the hell, what A, his point was, and B, what Al Sharpton meant by any of that. That's commentary in MSNBC. Are they contractually obligated to put him on for some reason? Does he have some kind of blackmail on some of the executives there? Because that, all he does is just get up there and well, Fartswell. It's like Eric Fartswell. Just bliviate. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this first hour. I don't understand the whole point of his, good heavens. That's just dumb. This is why America is becoming the way it is, because of this kind of stuff. Are you for convicting him, or are you with King George and the Confederates? What? What does that mean? King George and the Confederates? Is that a weird band? Does that, like, what is, where does that even come from? These are completely, totally, entirely different things. What is he talking about? Golly, he's the male Kamala. I told you about that. He's the male Kamala Harris. All right, so the a couple of things here. We're going to get into the student loan stuff coming up. The lawsuit filed in federal court. Conservative groups saying that he's over. Hey, of course, he overstepped his authority. Blah, blah, blah. Zoom. Can people stop using Zoom? Everyone needs to treat Zoom the same way that that you would treat fake bacon. Like Ron Swanson just took fake bacon and threw it in the trash. You need to treat Zoom that way. Whenever anyone's like, oh, I use Zoom, I die inside. 1,000 deaths. Whenever anyone's like, can you join a Zoom call? I want to tell them to choke to death instead. I mean, I want to say something insulting in response. Zoom is trash. It's trash. Stop using it. It's CCP owned, CCP created, and now there's a huge privacy storm because their updated terms are allowing an AI model, or allowing AI model training, rather, with your data. That's their new terms of service. I tweeted this out and someone's like, well, it's not saying exactly what you think it is. Shut up. I feel like Blanche Devereaux. Shut up. You're trash. Like, only my mom is going to understand that. Who's listening? Kane. Yeah. So essentially now what it, not a sentence, this is what it, they do. This, the privacy concerns, they're saying that the way it is now, their terms of service require you to allow AI to train on your data. That means your facial recognition, your audio, all of it, unconditionally, with no opt-out. In fact, this is subsection 10.2. It's talking about the data. It says you consent to Zoom's access, use, collection, creation, modification, distribution, processing, sharing, maintenance, storage of service-generated data for any purpose. And they get into machine learning, artificial intelligence for the purpose of training and tuning algorithms and models. No opt-out. I mean, it's carte blanche. And it confers upon Zoom a full and total right to exploit whatever it wants to call service-generated data. And that's like any kind of user-generated info. Anything. So it gets into the company's use of it. It gets into like royalty-free. I mean, listen to this. Worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free, sub-licensable, transferable license. Any action that they want for the entire data lifecycle. Oh my gosh. Now, they settled a huge suit back in 21 for like 80-something million dollars because they were accused of violating the privacy rights of millions of people because they shared data with all these other entities. And so, why do people continue using Zoom? Just because it's easy? Everyone always thinks it's not gonna affect me. It will. Zoom is garbage. Stop using it. So now it's like scraping all of your conversation. You can't be moved from it, and it's gonna train. It's a company that's based in Beijing, and it'll have access to your microphone, your camera, and they want to turn all of the data over to AI. Does that mean that, I mean, think of like the, like, just for a second here, like, what about like HIPAA stuff? Wouldn't, because there are doctors that still do televisits. What about HIPAA? What about television studios? Who ends up owning that? The content. It seems like a interesting issue. It's pretty broad ranging. Do you realize how many other video conference call apps that there are that are not Zoom? Everything. I mean, it's and everybody needs to, like, the people over at Bellingcat even are like, yeah, we just canceled our pro Zoom account. We're not going to be, I mean, people do therapy on Zoom. There's all kinds of stuff that still happens on Zoom. Stop using Zoom. Wouldn't that mean too, that if you're an attorney, I'm just trying to think of all of the things that come up when, because people use Zoom. Because they're trying to act like some of the defenders are trying to say, well, it's excluding some of the customer content and includes technical data. But yeah, no, I don't think so. That's, the language is incredibly vague, and I think easy stretch to allow that. It's completely vague as to whether or not there's, you know, any of the audio, video, and chat, anything like that is excluded. So then it brings up into question, well, what about, like, you know, confidential discussions, like with your attorney or doctor, anything like that? And just, I just don't like using it just because it's China owned. It's CCP owned. I've never understood why people like using Zoom. It is literally owned by the Communist Party of China. It's not hyperbole. I mean, it is. It's run by them. Why do people use it? I mean, there are people I know personally who bitch about China all day long, but then they'll hop on a Zoom call. What is wrong with you? It's trash. Stop using it. I've turned things down because of Zoom. People will be like, oh, can you do this? No, I can't. Nope. I tell Radio America, the executives, they like Zoom because it's easy, right? People will be like, oh, can we do a Zoom call? Nope. No, we can't. FaceTime. We have FaceTime and you can add people in FaceTime, can't you? Can't you couch co-op with FaceTime, Kane? How many people can you add in FaceTime?
I think we had at least four.
Okay, yeah.
Last time we were on.
I just think if a video call requires more than four people, then just keep it to an email, right? Because nobody cares. I can only care about so many people's opinions at the same time. If there's more than four people in the discussion, I don't care about your opinion. I just don't. I just don't have the, I don't care, right? I hate large meetings. I hate conferences. I hate all that stuff. Put it in an email. There's literally nothing that can be done. If you have to have a group call, do FaceTime, keep it to four, get your business done, and shut up. That's it, right? You also know what I hate? The small talk pleasantries. I just like to jump right into stuff. I don't like to sit there and go, so how was that? No, nobody cares. Just go right into it. Just go right in. You mentioned IP. The IP aspect is important too. Golly, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. And also, again, just to reiterate, it's the CCP. It's the Communist Party of China. I feel like that's super important, right? I mean, that seems incredibly important. So over the weekend, let me pull this up. You had a special counsel, Jack Smith. This guy. So Trump wrote on Friday, quote, if you go after me, I'm coming after you, on his social media network. Jack Smith interpreted that as a threat, and so he filed a protective order. Does he actually think that Trump is going to get him or something? I mean, when he said he could shoot people in the middle of Fifth Avenue, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was rhetorical, but, you know. But he says, Jack Smith entered Trump's particular social media post that said, quote, if you go after me, I'm coming after you, into evidence shortly as it was posted. And Smith warned that the post indicated that the former president was determined to attack his critics by any means necessary, like falsifying information for a FISA warrant, like that, or threatening your family, and that if you don't plead guilty to this particular crime, or a crime that you actually didn't commit, that you're gonna go after their kids. I mean, threaten like that? I'm just curious. There's a bunch of other stuff I got too. Threatening them with impeachment over crimes that weren't committed. I mean, I'm just wondering. They said that Smith said that the post indicated an attack. He wrote, quote, if the defendant were to begin issuing public posts using details or, for example, grand jury transcripts obtained in discovery here, it could have a harmful, chilling effect on witnesses or adversely affect the fair administration of justice in this case. The thing is he was already gagged about from talking about the case to anybody other than his attorneys. So I don't know why he felt the need to, like, reiterate that with his PO, because he was already that was already a thing. And so, I mean, they had told him that he couldn't, you know, talk to anybody, even, you know, anyone without about any of this, anything with this case. So they think that you deserve a PO for that. I have a million questions. I'm curious. Why is that? It also kind of seems like he's just looking for something to substantiate if it goes to court. Like, oh, look, look at his behavior. You know, you say that he wasn't threatening or trying to incite on January 6th, but look at this post on his social media network. Well, this is him trying to incite. That seems like kind of what he's doing here, I think, to an extent. Good heavens. And we talked about that before, how Jack Smith was the guy who was letting Lois Lerner off the hook over at the IRS. But Trump's post, though, we have a lot more on the way. We have coming up this, some of the latest with the Biden stuff we're going to get into. And also these primary challengers with Biden. We have a victory on AP psychology in Florida. Antifa was bragging about going to Sturgis with the possibility of shutting it down. Please, 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 A, let this happen, number one. And B, please let someone record it. I have never wanted, I mean, oh my gosh, somebody get Dana White. Somebody call Dana White and be just like have them throw an octagon somewhere up there. I mean, that seems like that's the way to do it, right? Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code DANA and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I don't think he's a good Republican at all. You know, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And I believe in the timeless principles of the party, because I think that leads to limitless potential. And when you look at, when I think about the party, most people say, is it the former president? Is it our elected officials? And no, I believe it's the people that are willing to vote for a Republican. And here's what I've learned crisscrossing this country. There are more people that are sick and tired of the direction the Democratic Party is going. And what they want is someone who's not a jerk, who's not a racist, who's not a misogynist, who's not someone who's a homophobe. You know, this is the opportunity the Republican Party has, and that's
very
the brand.
Quickly, the four words you just used, do all of them apply to former President Trump?
At times, absolutely. And at times, other places and other candidates.
Yeah. Well, he cut off there because he was talking about the other, which is really the meat and potatoes of the audio somebody wanted. But he was saying, oh, yeah, no, it's Trump and DeSantis is what he was saying in that audio soundbite. Who is this guy? He is so boring. He's running for president. His name is Will Hurd. And he's running for president. And he's just by himself. He's just boring. And he's just, I mean, I don't, he goes on MSNBC I think it's MSNBC. That's where all of his sound bites are coming from. And I just kind of wonder if you're constantly going on the left to criticize your own side. I don't know. You're using the left to go after the right. How are you not acting like the left at that point, especially with this kind of stuff? I can't stand that. This is for the same reason why I just loathe it when I see Republicans use, you know, leftist attacks against other Republicans. I can't stand it. Everyone the racist, everyone the misogynist, everyone of the usually the guys who are calling somebody else a misogynist, usually themselves are the misogynists. That's what I've learned dealing with these people. But in the meantime, as this, I think it's telling. What accomplishments does this guy have? I don't know a lot about this guy. He's like, I'm almost at the point where I can qualify to get on the debate stage. You're literally never going to qualify. He calls himself a modern Republican. You know what that means? A Democrat. Yep. He's a Democrat. And he says democracy is fragile. That's why I'm running. Now, he represents the Uvalde area. So he's really trying to use that as a platform on which to run. He's gone after everybody. I'm not a fan of this guy at all. He's one of the people in the Republican primary I'm not a fan of. There are several. He's one of them. All right, coming up into our second hour, we got a number of things still. We got some cultural issues. We're going to talk about some of the action with the student loan stuff. Although, you know, conservative group files a suit is a story that you get a dime a dozen. Honestly, it really is. But I'll just give you the latest of the land on it. And also a win for education. That College Board, they quietly reversed their stance on AP psychology in Florida. We'll talk about that coming up. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store.
Is there a memory that stands out to you right now in this moment? I mean, probably equal pay chance after the final. And I think, you know, they're saying equal pay, but could have been saying a lot of things. I think this team has always fought for so much more, and that's been the most rewarding part for me. Of course, playing in World Cups and winning championships and doing all that, but, you know, to know that we've used our really special talent.
Oh, my gosh.
To do something.
Done.
You know,
I'm
that's
already
really
done with
like
this
changed
shit.
The world forever.
What's your favorite? I think it's equal pay. I don't want to say it exactly as I said it on break, but you know it's a slow news day when I'm talking about this dumb broad. Welcome back to the show. Top of the second hour. So I think this is actually a peek inside a cultural movement. Because it's not really about Rapinoe. It's not about women's soccer either. And of course, you know, we're all talking about, she missed her penalty kick. I mean, it was just the most Schadenfreude moment I've ever seen. And I mean, she lost it and ended up 5-4 victory for Sweden over the U.S. I mean, this was the chick that got, what medal did she get? She got, Presidential Medal of Freedom or something for her activism in 2022. I just want to reiterate, she got a medal because she bitched about her vagina. No, it's accurate. You can get mad with my phrasing, but if you're angrier over the way I said it than what she actually did and got a medal for, then you're disturbed. So it's on you, not me. That's true, though. It's entirely true. You can go out and you can complain about being a chick and you're literally given a medal for it. What's funny is that she would have been excoriated and canceled if she had played against men who wanted to identify as women and run her off of her team. She would have been an activist against that because she is a scenester. She is a situational activist. She cares when it suits her. She cares when it is best to her advantage. She cares if there's benefit in doing so. Case in point, have you ever seen her speak up for any of these other female athletes who are being literally actually disenfranchised, who are being removed from teams or demoted in the on the podiums because they're beaten by a dude who wants to wear a skirt? No, you haven't, because it's, you know, situational for her. If she thought for one sec, I mean, that's actually, the irony is that she, because she kind of gave some word salad in support of dudes who wanted to cosplay as women. So she actually betrayed her own cause. I don't know why she's being celebrated as some major activist, because she's betrayed her own cause. I mean, she's like, oh, well, equal pay. The whole thing that makes people mad about the whole equal pay thing as it relates to soccer, because we know that it's a myth when we're looking at the rest of the workforce. In fact, the main study that they base this on, and I've written about this, there have been scores of really good deep dives into this. They actually ignored the choice that women were making, and they also were trying to compare entry-level female positions with those of, like, doctors, etc., who are men, and then trying to make an argument that way. Women are starting to outpace men in terms of CEO positions, but that's a whole other story. The issue is that she's trying to say, oh, equal pay for women in soccer. But in order to say that they are unequally paid and they're penalized strictly for sex is to ignore the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is that women's soccer does not get as many eyeballs as men. You don't see people lining the streets for somebody like Megan Rapinoe, but you do for Lionel Messi. Like in Dallas, they were everywhere. I have a friend who was like down there and was like, I just watched the team like pull, like, I mean, they were like, there were pictures on Facebook. It was crazy. I've never seen anything like that. There's like this resurgence or this growing fandom for the sport. There, it was always pretty popular, and I think women more so than men were all, at least in the United States, played soccer. I think a third of the girls in the United States play soccer or have at one point. More so than the dudes do. But there's this growing fandom for soccer in the United States. I mean, all of that is starting. And I think some of that is also fueled by people are just tired of the politicization of sports everywhere else. And they want to be able to just support the athleticism and get involved in it. Because, you know, everybody always looks like they're having so much damn fun whenever you're watching these matches. I mean, it really does. So you don't see people lining the streets for Megan Rapinoe. In fact, she makes it toxic. I've never seen anyone actually turn people against a sport the way she does. If you want someone to oppose something, make her the face of it. I mean, she is a walking Bud Light bottle. I mean, it's crazy. And she makes it absolutely toxic. So you're denying the reality that not enough people watch soccer as women's soccer, as men's soccer. Now, what's weird is that the fault of it is the women. You have a third of the girls in the United States that play soccer, but yet you still have more people watching men's soccer matches than women's soccer matches. Something's not adding up, is it? If you want to blame someone, blame your own damn feminists, your little millennials and your baby Gen Xers and everybody else. Blame everybody else. Or you don't have to blame anyone and you can just get the hell over it and go on with life. I mean, not everything has to be a struggle where you're a victim. I realize that that's the number one job profession in America, victimhood, but not everybody has to be a victim. And the other thing is, too, you know, like I said, you know, she was forcefully dragging people into an area where they didn't want to be. They didn't want politics with their soccer. They didn't want any of this. All of this is because she just is thirsty for attention. So the thing about equal pay, you know, women make choices. Also, the idea that, you know, if they make choices, they choose, you know, equal pay elsewhere. That's what a lot of that was chalked up to. Women just by nature choose different positions and different hours, etc., and have different priorities than men. There was this one story which I thought was really hysterical. They had, I don't know if you knew this, so Elle Decor. Have you guys ever heard of that? No, because you're dudes. Well, the ladies, have you ever heard of it? No, because you're busy. You're raising your kids and you're paying bills. It's like this fancy bougie decorating magazine. Let me share with you this. So it goes, step inside Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird's ultra stylish New York City apartment. Now, property is expensive in New York. And so you have this Megan Rapinoe who got with a female WNBA player. My gosh, of course it makes sense. And they have a huge apartment in New York City. I mean, this is a fancy, bougie apartment. They have this whole thing. Oh, look at their big, spacious apartment in New York City. That seems like, and she's also simultaneously complaining about equal pay. While she lives in a place that a handful of average American homes, you'd have to sell a handful of them to buy. Is that not a little bit disjointed there? She lives in this bougie New York City flat, totally decorated to the nines. All the latest stone for the countertop, the latest fixtures, the latest appliances. They have very expensive art on the walls. I mean, they have floor-to-ceiling windows. It is super bougie. It's all decorated to the nines. It's featured in these design magazines. And she's also complaining, you guys, about equal pay. Meh. Because not enough people want to watch her play soccer. I mean, she lives in a pad that's nicer than a lot of most people's homes. I mean, it's swank. If you're wondering where all the marble in the world is, it's in their kitchen. Their whole damn island looks like it's made of marble. Juan's throwing some images up from this spread. I mean, super swank, dude. Like the paint job on the walls, they got a Japanese toilet, don't they? That looks like cane. It looks like they got a Japanese toilet. Uh-oh. That's a Japanese toilet. How much you want to bet that it sings to you when you approach it?
I don't see a bidet, though.
That's a Japanese toilet, isn't it? Isn't that one of them fancy toilets?
It does kind of look like it.
Looks like one. It looks like one. I'm just saying. That's a fancy bathroom. She's got a fancy pad. Kane loves, his favorite video is her missing all her open net goals. How many does she miss, man?
All of them in the video.
If you had to count all of them, all of the ones that she's taken, she's missed all of them. But oh my gosh, you guys, equal pay. We can't play it because we'll get sued by the network that first aired it, you know, because they got rights over the, you know, thing. Equal pay. Something like that. Can I get around the licensing issue if I complain about like equal pay or being a woman or something? Isn't that what happens? All I got to do is bitch that I'm a woman and I get freebies. Isn't that how it works? Meh, meh. I'm so trod upon. Meh. Give me my stuff. Isn't that all I got to do? Make it rain. Where are the goodies at? Where's the goodie room? Come on. Like you just complain about being a chick and the goodies come down like manna from heaven. Isn't that how that works? Meh. Wait, now here's the other thing. Don't they get money? Don't they get an extra money that the men earned for them? Red State has a deep dive on this. I know we were kind of joking at first, but now it's time to get mad. So the women's whatever, they wanted a share in the men's World Cup earnings. And remember, they had signed a contract. These chicks' agents didn't, I guess, show up for them. So they wanted to contest it by doing what I was just telling you about. Complain about being a woman and the goodies rained down. So now they have to share World Cup earnings. The men literally have to pay a fee to the women because they're women. The men earned $11.7 million from their 2022 World Cup performance. The women just 2.9. And they lost to Sweden. And the men lost $4.4 million. Or sorry, 23. So the women, instead of pocketing what they earned, they get to divide an additional almost $4.5 million. So every player on the men's team lost almost $200,000 per player. They earned it. They did the work, but they don't get to keep it. Because patriarchy, that's their patriarchy fee. They have to pay $4.5 million to the women's team because of the patriarchy. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like a bunch of broads trying to convince you that the matriarchy doesn't exist. That's what it sounds like. Now, that's why they wanted an equal pay agreement because the U.S. is not the big entity in women's soccer anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons why they were pushing this so hard. But man, I'm telling you, I feel like I'm going to use that trick in everyday life, right? Like if there's something that I want, Like, what if something that I want is not on sale, but I want it to be not on sale? Can I just complain about, I'm a woman, I'm equal pay, and just, like, say terms, just spout off different terms? Misogyny, abortion, equal pay, I'm a woman. And then, like, I'll get stuff, and they'll be like, oh, my gosh, here's your discount, right? Can I just do that? We ought to try that, just see how well that works. I mean, that's what they do, right? That's what these chicks do. Yeah, it seems like it works, right? I mean, can you, I cannot let it go. Can you imagine in any other industry where you don't perform, but yet you get to get $4.5 million from the dudes just because you're a woman? That's pity pay. That's what that is. It's pity pay. And these broads lap it up. Empowerment. Where's my $4.5 million? Golly.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So this is kind of a, I was looking at this meme. I'm going to admit it. I was looking at this meme. Just literally, what does it say? Humans doing the hard jobs on minimum wage while the robots write poetry and paint is not the future I wanted. I feel that. But however, I also saw this headline. This says AI can detect breast cancer as well as radiologists, according to a study. So they're saying that AI actually can detect breast cancer and mammograms as effectively as experienced radiologists. And some say that it's a game changer for the field of oncology. In fact, they said that in a trial of 80,000 women that was published last week, this was in Sweden, they said that they showed AI readings of mammograms and it actually detected 20% more cases than the standard reading by two radiologists. And the AI assessments were verified as well, and they looked at the patient's risk profile, etc. So they're trying to look at a safe way to help people cut patient waiting times and reduce pressure on radiologists, because there actually is a shortage of radiologists. And that's the other thing. Like, I went into this rabbit hole where I was reading about, I could not believe that actually radiologists, that we need a lot more kids go into that field. You got job security. WorldCoin says it's going to allow companies and governments to use its ID system. No, thank you. Huh? Yeah, I don't want any of that. Nope. Yeah, there's no thing. I don't want any retina scans. I don't need anything like that. They're saying, yeah, you can use our ID system, WorldCoin says. But I mean, if you want to have your eyeball scanned like a freak, this is a Reuters story. It says that they're expanding their operations to sign up more people globally. And they aim to allow other organizations to use their iris scan and identity verifying tech. Again, no thank you. No thanks. We don't want any of that. We don't need any of that. That's okay. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Also, WGA and the AMPTP, they can't agree to resume negotiations. So the writer's strike is still going on indefinitely. I do agree with them on the AI stuff. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
You know, created a really sort of unbalanced dynamic and made the co-parenting thing really hard to actually live in practice. And so, you know, that experience, you know, was one that led us to this conclusion that, hey, we need not just a general parental leave policy, but an equal parental leave policy that treats birthing and non-birthing parents equally. So we've implemented that and give everybody 4 months, regardless of whether you're the birthing parent or the non-birthing parent. Thanks. And then last, we also, as a company, have always tried to sort of be socially minded and not just be about bottom line profit.
So if you're wondering who that lady was talking, that was the CEO of Harry's Razors. Yeah, the CEO of Harry's Razors. And remember Harry's, didn't they get some in trouble because didn't they partner with a gender cosplayer or something like that, like a trans influencer. I hate the word influencer. Yeah. And I don't understand the people who are like, oh, here's our razor for alphabet people. Like if you have sex this way, you can use this razor. Like, does it make your hair grow different? Like, I'm just curious. So they hired a woman that had a medically unnecessary double mastectomy to promote their men's razors. So, Does she grow facial hair? I mean, she got some peach fuzz. I don't know. Anyway, that's what they created a razor, a trans razor. It's a banana that identifies as a razor. It's just drag it on your face. It's how you do it. Did you know that, Kane?
I have no idea.
You just take a banana. You just drag it on your face. It's the trans razor.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. And then when it rots, you can just order another one.
Doesn't sound effective, but all right.
I mean, it's the whole gist of it, though, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works. I am walking a fine line here, guys. I am full of just smart aleckness right now. Why do you have to have special products for how you choose to do private things? I got questions. Like, how does this work? So I'm more, can I be really honest with the picture that you just sent me, Kane, and the link that you just sent me? Because I'm more concerned about the person's teeth than I am about how they shave. It looks like a ragged hot mess up there. I feel like I'm looking at some of the granite peaks coming out of the moors somewhere in Western England. That's what it looks like. I'm like, somebody needs to hit a dentist.
We need a Harry's toothbrush.
Little Invisalign. You know what? And they don't care what kind of, you know, bitch you got. So they did it. They said they partnered with a female who identifies as a man, a special razor. The razor explodes, I guess, if you're a chick and you try to use it, or a dude and tries to use it. I don't know. But you have someone who practices self-mutilation using a razor in a way that a man would. Now, I don't care if chicks want to use men's razors. Let me just be the first to tell you, women's razors suck. They're horrible. They are the worst things ever. They're created for people who are terrified of using an actual blade. I can't stand women's. I use a straight edge. I've shaved my legs, and when I want like a straight up razor. I want a razor. I want to do it properly. I got a safety razor. And I don't want to mess around with no, like, oh, here's your pink razor with the sticky thing on the end. That's annoying, and it gets weird, and it falls off. Nah, nobody wants to use that stuff. I mean, just, you know, a little bit of education and a little care goes a long way. Before I started using a safety razor and everything else, I would just use I'd get one of my husband's razors. My favorite thing in the world was to get one of his facial razors, because ladies, y'all know those were the best. And they would always be like, golly, why is this razor horrible, after they would go shave, because you just used it to shave your legs. That was one of the biggest, you know, disagreements early on in our marriage, because I can't remember what it was, but I was like, this is amazing. It was like the holy grail of razors. And it was so, it didn't have the stupid thing on the end. You know, the stupid sticky thing didn't have that. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And I loved the blade. I was like, oh, this is great. And he was like, you got to stop doing this, because I can't use it to shave my face after this. And I'm like, oh, that's shenanigans. No, nobody believes you. And then he got me my own, just like, so we had matching his and his razors. And so, because it's just a better razor. Dude's razors are better. So I have no problem with chicks using dude's razors. I have a problem with a razor company that celebrates the harmful body shaming mutilation of a woman who wants to cosplay as a dude. And then you try to sell that. Like you're trying to make money off of mental illness. It would be like using an anorexic person to sell diet pills. Stop it. It's the same damn thing. You can get mad at me all you want to for saying it, but it's the same thing. It would be like a company, or like a fitness company using a someone who's dealing with an eating disorder, or, you know, something like whatever. I mean, it's classless, it's inappropriate, and you're promoting something that is actually harmful. And so that's the issue. So you got this guy who comes out. They come out with this razor. And then you got this guy, the CEO, birthing persons. I got some thoughts on that. And he's sitting on a stage with a bunch of dudes. It's a sausage party that's on stage, and they're talking about birthing persons. There is nothing that is more potent as natural birth control than men who debase themselves on stage like this, or in any fashion like this. A man who gets up and is like, I'm a feminist, immediately, it is natural birth control. A man who gets up there and says things like birthing persons, that is natural birth control. Birthing persons. I heard every woman across the country who's listening to the program or watching the simulcast, I heard that sharp little intake of breath that you just did when he said that and when I repeated it. I heard it. That's like one of the most dangerous sounds in the world. Men know, right? Golly. I mean, it just, like touching the thermostat's a dangerous place to be. And then that little intake of breath. Oh, man. Gives a man chills. But this, it's women. Like, what is so wrong with saying that? What is so wrong with saying that? Why do companies got to debase themselves like this? So the CEO, again, on the, and he needs to eat a sandwich, this guy. Here's the thing. When people sit here and they talk about wokery and all this other stuff, and some people, there's some Republicans out there. Who do you got? Ed Rollins. Isn't he one of the guys out there who was on the Republican side? And now he's like, you guys got to stop talking about woke. No one wanted to know what Ed Rollins thought about everything, anything since before I was born. Nobody cares. I didn't even know he was still on the earth. In fact, I forgot that he ever existed, much less was still on the earth. Nobody knows what this old fart, nobody knows what these dudes think. Nobody cares. And you got some of these Republicans out there, you got to stop fighting the cultural war. These are the people who love to tuck their tail between their legs and go hide in the corner and cover their genitals. These are the people who, whenever you're looking for somebody in a fight to help you, they're never there. Everything that is downstream, everything that for downstream from culture is it's policy. And if you think that that stuff doesn't matter, if you think the wokery doesn't matter, just let me fill you in. Because, you know, in China, you can't get on a train and go anywhere unless you have a certain acceptable behavioral credit score. You can't get a cab. You can't eat in a restaurant. You can't take a domestic flight, much less an international flight, unless you have an acceptable behavioral credit score. Now, you might think, oh my gosh, but Dana, that's China. That's not here. Yes and no. It's in Canada. It's peaking. It's head up in Europe. And it most absolutely is here. For instance, imagine you're a business owner and you have a business and you're engaged in a completely legal business and no complaints. Everything is, you know, above board. But then you, all of a sudden, your bank decides to end or close your bank account because they don't like the business that you're in. I mean, granted, it's not the business of taking taxpayer dollars and financing the illegal research into gain of function. But, you know, no, it's, say you're a gun store, just a gun store. That actually happened here in the United States. The United States, Brandon Wexler, who is the owner of Wex Gunworks, Wells Fargo thought that his business was too politically incorrect and they closed his bank account, not just his bank account, but his personal account and his employees' accounts. There's a handful of these stories. That's just one example. When does it stop? Where's that line? Is the line, can you guarantee that the line's going to stop at a gun store? What if you're one of those parents who speaks up at your kid's school board meeting? You know, the type where parents were considered to be domestic terrorists by the FBI per classification under the Patriot Act. What happens if all of a sudden you're debanked? Because you said the wrong thing at the wrong time at your school board meeting. I mean, if you think that that kind of approach can't happen here, well, the people who were saying that you can't have your bank accounts closed for just simply operating an entirely legal business, they said they were saying that same thing 10 years ago. And it doesn't even matter if it's that. There are other people who, just because of political affiliation, have had issues. Nigel Farage, he's not involved in any kind of gun anything. He's over in UK. He had his bank accounts closed because of his politics. That's the whole point. People talk about wokery, and they talk about woke, and they talk about the Marxist battle and culture. That is what it is in effect. Everything else is just priming the populace. It's all leading to action. Don't think that it stops at simply book battles in libraries or arguments over Barbie movies. It actually has a real, actual physical in this meat space world effect. And it's growing in scope. That is the end game of this. So when I hear people like Ed Rollins and all these other morons in the Republican Party bitch and moan because they're tired of hearing about quote unquote woke, what I'm hearing is that they don't care if you get targeted one day because you have the wrong political opinion. They don't care if your business accounts get shut down because your totally legal above board business isn't what they would like politically. They don't care if you speak up and at your kid's school board meeting and have your bank account shut down, or if you just simply exist as someone who believes in limited government and your bank account is shut down, or worse, it goes beyond that, your business, your personal, then maybe one day you can't get a domestic flight. Because not only have they shut down all your bank accounts, but your behavioral credit score isn't good enough. So what I hear from all of these Republicans who say that they're tired of discussing wokery, they're just tired of discussing the train that's coming unless something's done about it. We got a lot more to hit. We got Florida Man on the way.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so this is in Okaloosa. A Florida man said when his family members were trying to evict him, "You can't because he's got an explosive device." He was arrested after he claimed to have a bomb when family members tried to evict him from their home. The statement from the deputies said that they were called to a home off Tyner Street before noon Thursday. There was a disturbance. They talked with the guy on the phone. They got him at least out of the home's garage. And then after he had threatened his family with an explosive device, and they had to get the bomb squad there, he was taken into custody. They kept the surrounding area closed and restricted traffic until it was all cleared. So he was charged with making a false bomb threat and aggravated assault. So that's, yeah, you can't, not even to family, you can't make that kind of threat like that, especially if they're trying to evict you. He seems like kind of like a squatter a little bit. Let's see this. A Florida man shoots 100 poisonous toads. This story, if I can pull it up, but I'm about ready to take this whole entire screen and throw it across the studio because it keeps freezing up on me. And I don't think I'm going to be able to hear. I'm going to do a different one because I can't get this to open. We're having some technical difficulties here. Yeah, I can't get it to open. Let's see. This Florida man got sucked up by a tide and capsized his boat and was lost at sea for like 2 days. That sounds horrible. See, boats. He wasn't on a cruise, but this happened over actually just end of last week. Charles Gregory, he was out for a fishing trip off the coast of St. Augustine, and the tide rose a lot faster than he thought it was going to. And so the wave hit his 12-foot John boat, knocked him into the water. He managed to get back on board, but it really quickly took him out to sea. So for 2 days, his 25-year-old struggled to stay alive. He clung to his boat. He was basically abused by jellyfish. He was stung a whole bunch, and he was like as red as a lobster, and he was scared to death. Finally, boat crews pulled him from the Atlantic after an air crew spotted him 12 miles offshore, according to the Coast Guard. And footage released by the Coast Guard showed a dramatic rescue, and the boat was going down. So he said at night was the worst. It was freezing cold in the water. He said in the day it was horrible being so sunburned and dehydrated and hot. But he also rhabdomyolysis, whatever that is. It's a condition that causes the breakdown of damaged muscle and muscle cell contents that is worsened by dehydration. So, man, and severe sunburn. So he's on the road to recovery. Stick with us.
With the investments in green energy and investment, infrastructure investment, and even reshoring manufacturing jobs, it's pretty clear that although we're making a lot of progress, the sort of hangover from the pandemic, which was obviously a century unprecedented situation, is still causing melancholy. And also, you know, the impact of those investments is going to take some time to bake in. But that's our job to make sure that we communicate.
Do you hear what I said, Kane? I said, this is what I said.
She does.
Welcome back to the show. Dana Lashier, your professional radio lady. It's a slow news day. So we're acting up. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour. Your lovable curmudgeon. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast, channel 347 DirecTV as well. I'm really actually not even interested in a thing she just said there. I honestly looked at her and I was like, why does she look like that? That's a horrible angle. And she's saying COVID hangover. That's nonsense. Can I just get to you what I want to talk to you about? It's about as nonsense as what Stephen King just tweeted. Okay. I want you guys to tell me what is wrong with this tweet. Okay. Don't look it up. Stop it. I'm going to tell you what he said, and I want you to spot what's wrong with it. All right. Okay. So this is what he tweeted. So Stephen King, quote, "I see Waffle House is trending. Good. I like to get off the road, get in there, order me up eggs, bacon, chunked up home fries, sausage, English muffin, and a waffle. Good to go, man. Good to go." So there's some things that are not right about this. Kane, do you have any ideas? Being that you and I are Waffle House aficionados.
That is true.
We have dined at many a Waffle House. I've done homework at a Waffle House. In the morning and at 1 a.m. Actually, in the morning. I've only ever been there in the morning, I think. just thought about that. Only ever been in there at some point in a morning. But there's some things that are sticking out here. The first thought was, well, how do Waffle House enjoyers? You know, that one meme with Steve Buscemi. So here's the problem. Yeah. The hell are home fries at a Waffle House?
Never heard of it. I mean, I know what they are, but
Waffle House. I know what home fries are, but what are they at the Waffle House?
They're called the hash browns.
Don't tell him that. He don't know. English muffin?
That's a good point. I didn't catch that one.
I only know because I hate English muffins. And I know that they... Has he ever been in one?
He is a fiction writer.
Let's
keep that in mind.
If you're going to fake something, why would you fake that? Like, why would you write something that's so obviously... There's not a home fry. You can get the, like now as Kane was saying, you can get the hash browns. But what is he talking about here? I mean, and you know how you can get them. The only chunked part of it is you can get a chunked hash brown. It's not home fries. It's a hash brown. You can get them smothered. You can get them covered. Nobody, can I just say, I've never, sidebar. I think you can measure a person by how they get their hash browns at Waffle House. Oh, you know I'm right. You can measure them by how they get, however they order them. It's like a Rorschach test, sort of. But you can tell what type of person they are by how they get their hash browns. I've never understood the smothered. I know lots of people who get them smothered, but I've never understood that. You can get them, what's the other one when they put the the mushroom caps, the cap. You can put mushrooms. I've never understood that. I've never actually seen anybody do that, but I know it's on the menu. Have you ever, how do you get your hash browns, Kane? Let me judge you right now.
What?
How'd you get your hash browns?
I used to get them, like back in the day, I used to get them covered and smothered.
You did both of those things?
Yep.
So it's like a Philly cheesesteak, but with
anymore,
hash browns.
Though. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Now you can get them country. Now, I've had them like that before.
Yeah, country's actually good.
With the gravy on it. And then I can't remember the other ones. What are the other ones? I know you can put peppers on them. But anyway, there's no home fries is my whole point. You can't get home fries. And I mean, is it, unless it's a new brand new addition on the menu.
They have a bunch of different new things on the menu, actually, I'm looking at right now. So they have the cheesesteak melt hash brown, the chicken melt hash brown, the sausage egg and cheese hash brown.
Bacon, I want all egg those and
cheese
things.
Hash brown, that ham, egg amazing. And cheese hash brown, sausage, egg and cheese hash brown, bacon, egg and cheese grits. But oh, they got the grits too. I forgot about that.
He don't even know what grits are. Come on.
And then you can build your own hash brown bowl there.
Home fries are not the same thing though. Home fries are not that. Home fries are more like a poutine, like what Canadians eat, the fries and gravy. Home fries are like the sliced or like you cube them up potato. They're not like shredded. So he has no clue what he's talking about.
No, it looks like the hash browns.
I just hate him. I just want to hate on him for a little bit.
The hash browns themselves on a plate, not a bowl, is only the scattered, smothered, and covered, and the all the way.
Golly, did you just say you can just get the bowls there?
Yeah.
I love that's how they do bowls, because everywhere else, it's just without the carbs.
Right.
And it's just here's the protein in a bowl, and at the Waffle House, you can get all your carbs with the cheese in it. That's their bowl. Gosh, I love it. I mean, it's one of the best restaurants that's ever existed on God's green earth. It really is. So he's never been there.
Yeah. Maybe,
maybe
he was at a Waffle House. He just messed up.
Why would you be such a poser? He's such a poser. Who does this type of stuff? Who does this type of stuff? It's like watching Eric Greitens pretend to be in any way remotely Republican or conservative. You know? Out there like, oh, I like to order me up some eggs. Eggs and chunked up home fries. Who talks like that? Yes, I would like some chunked up home fries. Mm-hmm. That's not even what a hash brown is. An English muffin? You know what English muffins are? Biscuits of hate. Because do you like sand on your biscuit? Because that's what it is. It's a sandy biscuit. That's what an English muffin is.
Sandy hate biscuit.
It's a sandy hate biscuit. That's what an English muffin is. Have you eaten one? It's like, you're like, the hell is this grit? Why is that?
Yeah, I just went through the new menu here. I don't see any English muffins. They haven't added English muffins to the menu.
No, they haven't, because they aren't on there. Golly. Yeah, they don't exist. It's not on the menu. Now, you know how they invented the English muffin? Someone dropped it on the beach. It was their kid's biscuit, and they just dusted it off and handed it to their kid. That's what it was. I don't know if you guys knew that. Little known fact. You learn a lot of stuff here on the Dana Show. Yes, you do.
Fact, you say?
Yeah, it's a hashtag fact.
Got it.
When you put hashtag in front of it, it's indisputable. Oh. See, if I would have just said it's a fact, that's sus, right?
Questionable, right?
Yeah. So that's how do there, fellow breakfast eaters. I like how he thinks that people aren't going to question him. And I also, this is how he tries to, I guess, reach out to the common man. Like this. Don't you guys like your chunked up home fries? Yeah, sure there. Fed boy. How do, fellow Waffle House eaters? Hello.
You got the waffle part, right?
Yeah, he'd at least, you know. Well, Waffle House. I mean, he figured that much out.
Right.
Good heavens. I mean, this is the same guy who was like really good friends with J.K. Rowling. And then when the rage mob came for her, he like quietly backed away because he's a female copulatory organ. I have nothing nice to say about Stephen King, except the beginnings of his stories always start nice. And then he gives up halfway through. Oh, what the hell? Here's a giant spider. Who cares? I give up. Like, did we ever figure out what the deadlights? Did we ever figure that out? Did you give that up too? I mean, the hell. Oh, yeah, I read him. Uh-huh. Oh, I read him all throughout high school. Oh, I know. I'm not just hating on him for no reason. I actually own his stuff. Damn it. I'd burn it, but I already paid the money. Anyway. So, there's your Stephen King for the day. I got something else to throw in your face. The Heat is racist.
What?
You know that story, The Heat is on?
Right.
Who did that? Was that the Wang Chung people?
No.
Who did that song? Everyone, make the internet be your Google. Hang on.
Stand by.
What'd you say, Steve?
Stand by.
Oh, Glenn Fry?
Yeah.
That was when everybody
That's right. It was Beverly Hills.
Everyone got pissed. Everyone got mad at him because it was like a corny offshoot of like what he used to do for the Eagles. And everyone was like, this is not a Glenn Frey song.
It was for that movie, though, I think.
Yeah, right? It was a Beverly Hills Cop. Anyway, instead of is on, is racist. The heat is racist.
Doesn't flow.
Doesn't. Nah, there's an extra syllable in there. What if we just like, how can we just shove it all together? The reason I say this is because that is an actual for real headline, guys. Someone over at The Guardian, because The Guardian, which is a British publication, instead of hiring like a meteorologist, they hired this butt munch who is, what's his name? Jeff Goodell. He's an award-winning climate journalist. Climate journalist. Do you know what a climate journalist is, Kane?
No.
They look outside and write about the weather.
Wow.
Open the window and look outside. It looks sunny and hot today.
You win awards for that?
Yeah, you win awards for that. Uh-huh. So, Jeff Goodell, the award-winning climate journalist, he says that racism is at the heart of the U.S. failure to tackle deadly heat waves.
What's at the heart?
The racisms. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So he talks about this one guy because he says that there's no federal rules related to heat exposure for workers indoors or out. And he says it's because, have you heard of OSHA? You stupid moron. Guess what? If you come here illegally, you probably aren't going to be working with OSHA. Am I right? Good heavens. I mean, thoughts, Kane? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Mm-hmm. The heat is racist.
I'm unsure. I mean, is there any explanation in there as to, like, is it black people aren't allowed to get air conditioners? Like, what are they saying?
They're saying that heat is racist.
Oh,
because so it's someone who was, I mean, they say they talk about, I mean, and it's mainly like people who come in, whether I think they try to skirt past the legal status of the people who are working outdoors, and they say that there aren't any federal regulations for heat, except there are. OSHA literally has like a whole thing about working in hot environments, and they have like they literally have a number of states even have their own temperature set standards for different things, and they have like they have OSHA recommendations for even thermostat settings and working in heat, et cetera, et cetera. There's all kinds of stuff that, so I don't know. I mean, yes, if you come in illegally, guess what? Your employer probably isn't going to be working with OSHA.
Right.
But what does that have to do with the weather being racist? You stupid moron, Jeff Goodell. How did this guy win an award?
I don't know.
Did he get a plaque for getting out of bed? Good job, Jeff. You got out of bed today.
If I'm in a job that works outdoors daily during the hot of the sun, I already know I need to prepare myself for that and maybe even pull myself away into the shade with a beverage if I'm feeling a little faint or whatever. Like, I think there's ways to deal with this without just going out there and blaming racism for the heat.
I mean, OSHA literally has an initiative called the National Emphasis Program that is related to working in the heat. So this guy, and I've noticed that the examples that he uses, because he wrote a book about this, I'm not going to tell you the title because I don't want anyone to buy it. It's garbage. It's trash. But he says that, it's mostly black and brown workers. And he kind of omits the fact that, you know, when people come over illegally and they're working outside in the heat, that it kind of skirts past the whole legal status. And he gets into saying, basically his accusation is that air conditioning, and it's cruel to make people work outside. And also air conditioning is, you know, that people aren't providing it because it's racist. He's not looking into, wow, let's see, people want to skirt the law and use cheap labor and exploit that and take advantage of it. And you're shocked that they wouldn't. I mean, it's just so dumb. This is the left. But and he blames racism, even though we have federal rules in place, which he argues don't exist. We got to get moving.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I went a little long last segment, and I apologize to you. So we got Stephen Yates coming up. According to Wall Street Journal, three men are battling the FBI over buried Civil War gold. Treasure hunters say that there was tons of ground that they discovered in Pennsylvania, something like $500 million worth. And it was Civil War era gold that disappeared. They claim the FBI took it, and they've been fighting with them ever since. And UFO hunter discovers a secret water or underwater alien base. It's what he says off Yorkshire coast. We'll talk. We got Stephen Yates coming up too. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. You can listen coast to coast. You can also catch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV as well. Just a little bit ago, actually, but last hour of the program, we were discussing how the Zoom terms of service now demand that you allow all of your data, everything, audio, facial recognition, private conversations, everything unconditionally, irrevocably, no opt-out, AI can train on it. Now, I hate Zoom because of one big reason. Who owns it? Who owns it? Who still owns it? And who ultimately calls the shots on it? This just seems like bad news. I have no idea why this is. I can't even believe that government officials still use this. On this, and I have about three other things I want to make sure that we get to. Our good friend Stephen Yates, you can follow him on Twitter at Yatescom, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. Steve, always good to see you. I know you hate, we're like common in our hatred of Zoom, correct?
Well, I mean, I just don't understand why we don't have widely adopted, say, non-communist platforms to be able to do these things. I mean, there's obviously a market for these services. People want to be able to do the video chat thing.
Yeah.
And it just baffles me whether it's the communications apps, the pay apps. My wife, Michelle, and I were out going somewhere and it had Alipay listed, I think at a CVS or a Walgreens, something like that. Alipay is the Chinese wallet. Yeah. It just kind of baffles me why we don't have kind of deeper roots in, say, pro-America or at least pro-freedom kind of platforms.
Somebody would want to make money and create something that will compete with this. Just give people like a quick summation of how dangerous this is, especially in the hands of CCP, the Communist Chinese Party, to be able to have your data, your private conversations, your likeness, your voice, and train AI with it. I mean, it becomes theirs. That seems incredibly dangerous to me. And I don't want Democrats being able to define rules for AI. I don't want the CCP having anything to do with it. But as it is, there's a lot of problems here. This is very problematic.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Communist Party of China has presided over the most advanced artificial intelligence and surveillance network ever known to mankind. And so it's a giant vacuum for data. They have demonstrated in Hong Kong and some other places their willingness and ability to use these technologies to enforce its political objectives very, very forcefully, coming from whether they're aiming at speech, your bank accounts, any host of different priorities for the Communist Party of China. And they obviously will extend those tentacles out to us. Now, I don't understand why we don't have kind of a law that says you can't use any of these kinds of things if you have any business whatsoever with the United States government, but especially if you're an employee of the United States government.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, because I just at one point, you know, I'm reading this. I was reading about all of the different things because it's a pretty wide net that they cast. I mean, who's to say that they wouldn't use some kind of deepfake tech to try to as justification to start a war?
For sure. They can create controversies. They can create narratives. And basically, They are experts at political warfare. Now, we have enough problems of people with no ethics in our own country. But if you have an entire government of the one of the most populous countries on the planet that has zero ethics, zero accountability, zero transparency, I think that's a very, very scary thing. It sort of goes back to the 2001 Odyssey kind of movies where IBM becomes HAL. I don't know if anyone can even remember that stuff, but this is really taking that 10 times over, knowing everything about you with very predictive qualities that are accurate. And so they know how to manipulate you. Then they know how to manipulate our government and our media.
Yeah, dangerous stuff. This still kind of keeping on the same track. China and Russia had naval warships near Alaska. They said there was nothing to worry about. There was no need to panic. But I mean, it still is a pretty aggressive move. I mean, there were a number of sources on this, but apparently the U.S. Navy ultimately mobilized four different destroyers to kind of guide them away from American waters. But it was a they said it was a joint operation conducted by two significant American adversaries, 11 ships. That's how many were in 11 ships. And it was nearing the southwestern coast of Alaska. And they said it was pretty unprecedented in terms of the size, the amount, you know, the scope of it. It was Russia and China working very closely together. I mean, it seems like a little bit more than it seems like it was purposely provocative. This wasn't just or just a normal military exercise. This seems very, very just purposefully, like I said, provocative and getting that close. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's just further demonstration of the concept of provocative weakness that I've talked about for a very, very long time, that there's at least a coincidence, if not a correlation, with the Biden team coming into office, where our adversaries feel like they can get away with just about anything. And lest anyone think that I'm overly partisan, of course I am, but there's proof that they didn't do this in the Trump years. They didn't do it in the Obama years. They didn't do it in the Bush years. They didn't do it in the Clinton years. You can go all the way back to Jimmy Carter before people felt like they could use this like a doormat. And so this is, I think, a bipartisan should be indictment of the weakness and fecklessness of the Biden team. So Russia and China feel like they can get away with anything. This is very provocative. Does it mean a war is in the offing? I hope not, but at least a political war is underway. I think an economic war has long been underway. And if we're not careful, this weakness does bring this coercion to our shores.
And also talking with our friend Stephen Yates, on the heels of this weird documentary that they came out with, I mean, it certainly seems like they're priming their people for something. This documentary, it was China that released it. It was a television documentary, and it was looking at their military ability, their capacity to attack Taiwan. And in it, there were all these Chinese soldiers pledging to sacrifice their lives in some sort of Taiwanese invasion. What is this signal? I mean, this could just be, you know, another exercise in propaganda. You know, maybe still they don't. I just read another story talking about how their currency was losing some core support, at least with firms and investment. But still, that's I mean, it's troubling this, you know, with the two ships off the Alaskan waters on the heels of this little weird whatever propaganda thing that they came out with. I mean, it's increasing in provocation, but at the same time, they still haven't done anything.
They haven't, but the more they condition their people to accept a new normal of aggression and kind of a wartime footing, leads them to ignore the fact that their economy is actually coming down, that they're having other kinds of problems in their own country. And it basically is dry tinder that could be lit at any time. And we are doing next to nothing to prepare our people because we would rather have peace. We would rather believe that if we're rational and nice and we just exchange with other people in good faith, that we'll get that in return. But karma doesn't always work like that. And so I think that it's just very, very clear evidence that not only are they engaged in political warfare with us, they're engaged in political warfare at home to make their people ready to pay any price. And it also smokes out anyone who dissents early.
Like their foreign minister?
They don't have to deal with it.
Like their foreign minister who just like went who just disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally no one. I mean, they disappeared the head of Interpol, the international agency that's meant to go find people. And so this is, this is not something that's been sneaking up on us. It's been happening in plain sight. And as you know, we've talked about this over and over and over. I don't want a war with China, and I don't want to lean into something that's really costly and risky. But at the same time, you can't turn a blind eye right to a big bully with the means to do great damage to us, thanks to really bad policy that gave them privileged access to our communities, to our media, to our markets. And we've got to begin the process of undoing that. But right now, we're in a pinch.
Do you think that they're more in a position to maybe try to attempt a blockade as opposed to any kind of invasion? Or, I mean, what does that make sense for them to maybe choose that route over any kind of, you know, engagement on land?
I think they're experts at trying to find where can you cause chaos, disruption, sow doubt, division, et cetera, in your opponent's community. And that way you somewhat win the political war without having to fire a shot. It doesn't mean they're unwilling to fire a shot. They've killed millions and millions of their own people. They don't mind doing that. But they find it cheaper to do it this other way. And so they'll push it that way first.
Yeah. They had this. I mean, talking about pushing it, they were firing water cannons. Philippines, they summoned the Chinese ambassador, AP reports, because there was this water cannon incident in South China Sea where they said they were firing the water cannons at some of their vessels over the weekend. They said it was a tense, hours-long standoff. It occurred on Saturday, and it was near this shoal, which has been occupied by the Philippine forces for, you know, decades. And then they had this Chinese vessel that came up, and they were firing on. So it was water cannons now, but I mean, good grief. It's like they're playing chicken. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it.
Well, they're a bully on the block. And it's one of those things. I think Congressman Gallagher had a quote from his Select Committee on Competition with the CCP, just emphasize that they're pushing their sword. Unless it meets steel, they're going to keep pushing. And, you know, who in the world woke up and thought the Philippines was going to cause a war? No one. Right. So they're pushing other people around because they can, and other people see someone getting bullied. They don't want a part of that. It just forces them to recalibrate. It just deepens the distrust of, is America a reliable balance?
Yeah.
Not do we want to rush in and have a war, but are we even reliable on helping them stand by their side or give them the material benefits they need to stand for themselves against this big bully? I think that doubt is dangerous out there.
Yeah. You know, going into this, because I think they gained some in Belt and Road, and they gained some like with France, and like some of the response that they got from, you know, Trudeau and others. It's like they gained some allies here, but then they lose some elsewhere. Because I saw this headline. This was after the Prime Minister of Italy was meeting with President Joe Biden. That was the one where I guess he kind of slept through it. One of the reasons that I felt comfortable going to Italy, because I like their new government, and I also like the fact that they are looking to get out of this Belt and Road initiative. It's like always been this. It surprised me that they kind of got into it. Of course, their previous government, but now they have almost like a reshaped government in Italy. But they're looking looks like they're shifting towards the Western view of things and exiting that Belt and Road initiative. What does that mean for a nation like Italy? Because Italy was really using them as, look, we've got the Western world and we're getting Europe. And now that they're pushing to get away, that's a ding on China's armor there.
It is. I mean, I look at it as sort of the popular food countries of Europe have had this very friendly relationship with China. But Italy was kicked really, really hard by COVID at the beginning of that outbreak.
And I remember, not to interrupt you, but I remember the leader of the area of Prato saying that the reason that they didn't say anything about it at first is because they didn't want to be called racist, because they had already had a big fight with illegal immigration due to Chinese businessmen buying up a lot of the factories that did a lot of the textiles there. I remember that.
Absolutely right. Every bit of that is fact-checked true. And basically, you would think it's surprising how long a lot of this backlash has taken. It's taken a long time in America to get past our political hangover with COVID and realize, yeah, the Chinese knew and they did this to us and it hurt and it cost a lot and they should be held accountable. Well, the Italian government, it took a while for the people's voice to kind of come up on this. At first, kind of the globalist boot was on their mouth. You shall not speak ill about these migrants who came in and took your jobs out from under you in the textile industry. Yeah. And then left you with this nifty virus that killed a lot of Italians. I don't know what the Chinese did to kill Italians in particular, but it really was virulent as it went through Italy. So I think that the government now is smart to do this pivot. I would like to believe the rest of good food Europe would follow, but I think they're still filling their gullets. And I don't know that their people have risen up quite the way the Italian populist movement has. So, I mean, Germany and France are still swimming in the warm bath of conventional
I'm praying things. France does, because the French love to riot over, they literally will go to war over a traffic camera. I mean, this is, you know, so much bigger. Come on. Like, let's see, out of all the things that you should riot about, this should be it. Stephen Yates, at YatesComs on Twitter. Always appreciate it, my friend. Always look forward to our discussions. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Of course, you too.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Lots of good stuff that comes out from the from that newsletter. All kinds of good stuff. We were talking a little bit about really ultimately a lot of the the Prato area, Tuscany and Florence and all that stuff and the Italian response and everything that was leading up to that. That really honestly, seriously should be a documentary about how in the very beginning, Italy was like really afraid to speak out about the virus running rampant because they were terrified they were going to be called racist again, because when they started objecting to illegal immigration coming into their country and working in their textile factories, they didn't want to have to litigate that essentially in the public square all over again. And it's incredibly wild that it happens like in Tuscany, in the seat of unions and guilds where all of that was born. And you had all of these displaced, people who, these tradesmen who for generations studied this particular craft and were so good, which is why they were sought out by everybody. And then you have, I mean, it is such a huge thing. We could talk about it for forever. The other thing that we were discussing too, really quickly, because I know we got to wrap here, but the AI situation, because Kane was wondering aloud, how many other apps and things have changed their terms of service, have modified it to where now AI can be training off of your data? It's a really good point, not just Zoom. All right, to date in stupidity.
All right, it is Rep. Jerry Connolly out of Virginia. I think it's 11th District. He's claiming here that Bidenomics, the reason Americans aren't buying it is because Biden's just too, he's too modest about it. Listen to this.
Well, I do think the economy is going to be a huge asset. Biden has been maybe too reticent, too modest to take credit. But I mean, where we've come since the depths of the pandemic.
Who would want to take credit for Bidenomics? It's a failure on all fronts.
Well, I mean, Kamala. She's the only person, I think, who actually would. Folks, that does it for us this evening. Sign up for the newsletter. All kinds of good stuff coming out there. And, of course, find us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.